Mr. Crowley, Reel 10. You were talking about Hiroshima.
Yeah, outside Hiroshima was the museum of the Holocaust of the atom bomb. And that was terrifying when you were there. There was an anti-tank gun, or an anti-aircraft gun, rather. And at the time of the blast, the crew had been looking up. And the gun and the crew were mummified. And they were in the museum. And all I remember was the chap on the right hand side of the gun, and he was absolutely perfect, apart from being mummified. And his eyes had been left out, and they grew down his cheeks, and it was, you know, a terrible person. And I remember that. That was graphic, that particular exhibition, that gun. And his two men on the anti-aircraft.
And the Japanese you met never referred to this in conversation with you?
No. And we went down with you. They had a lot of children. You know, the children had been mummified, and they were in cases. They spent much time. But the city itself, I always remember, the impression was, it was just like a tip. You know, I've seen these tips in England, everything just sticking in. That was it.
The money, pay that you took with you to Tokyo, had you got some money to draw?
Yes.
Additional to your normal weekly pay?
We didn't draw anything. We were fed, we got 50 cigarettes a day if you wanted them. So we didn't draw money. So it was all fine. So we just took a little bit. The money didn't need any in Tokyo, actually, unless you availed yourself of the prostitutes or something like that. I mean, apart from the bus fares and the taxi fares.
What was a sergeant's pay at this time?
At that time, I think I was on about £7. I was on £38 on a demote, so it would be about 28.
And how long was the leave that you had?
Yes.
And you'd fly back, presumably?
I was taken back to the airport, and they were taken back, put on the plane, and had it been stolen, and taken back to the unit. And by the time I got back to work, and it was finished, I think, or it was about to finish, we were in a rest camp.
Were there celebrations when the actual time came? Yeah, I was going to say, what happened to you then?
Well, went back into a sort of a semi-permanent position, and then after a few weeks, the prisoners started to filter through, and they were to be lost or processed, going through this camp.
And were you a part of this reception?
A small part. One of our jobs is to dismiss them going through and count them going through. Take the particulars, if they could give particulars, some of them couldn't. And then they were passed on to the Americans for day lancing. To the interrogation, not the interrogation, the interview. And then they just disappeared.
And were these prisoners of several nationalities, American, Australian, what have you?
Americans, British, we saw quite a few of losses coming through. I think we steered the British prisoners through the bus. I mean, there wasn't only the VLI, there was quite a few of the regiments. We saw quite a few of them.
What condition were they in?
Poor, mentally. And physically, I would have thought. Some of them didn't look as though they were scarred, but I think they would be. I think sometimes, I mean, if you're on rice diet or something like that, I think it blows it anyway. So if they don't even look scarred, but they probably will. But we found that they were mentally unstable. Most of them were just in quiet. And then once they got this sort of freedom, they realised. trying to get off you. I think some of the, I mean, you've got some vital lies in the thing.
And presumably, when they left you, they were fed, clothed, and what have you. Were they in rags or anything of that name? Were the clothing poor when they came through?
We went to Coast Sand and had a large memorial service in Coast Sand Cemetery. For those that have been killed.
In your battalion?
Yes. Two of the lads, Cottingham and Lillian, from Shirley. Gardner, there's no one in there, but he was from Cornwall. He was one of my section, Lillian and him. Cottingham was in Air Company. I actually saw the grave, you know, in the market. One of the nice things about the Crows and Cemetery, as I remember, each grave, or each section of grave, the British grave was looking towards England. The American graves were looking towards America, and, you know, whatever country, so they tried to
face them that way.
It was a nice cemetery, actually. Well, if any cemetery is nice, it was well set up.
The full battalion went.
Yes,
must have been a very moving moment. This is the swimmer that we have in earlier in the tape.
He'd been a bit of a lad when he was younger, you know, teenage, he'd been a bit of a guy, but he'd got a little smile, and a little creepy smile. He's just, you know, a bit of a younger thing. I mean, I was 21, 23, but they'd been on the younger than being on the National Service side, 18. But the next minute was a volunteer.
And after the ceremony, what happened to you then?
We just got on the, a few days and then got on the ship, the Empire Hall. But we didn't know where we were landing up.
You hadn't been told?
And the Empire Hall was a vastly different ship to the Empire Trooper that went out on. We had cannons for the sergeants in the group. And better decks. It was 4,000 or 5,000 tons bigger than the Empire Trooper. And we believe, I don't know how far it's true, that it's been a guest staff for the old holiday ship in the Black Sea. Captured after the 4-5-4 and put in the service as a trooper. And there's a lot of German stuff on it. We have copyright bars, different things on it. And the sergeant's mess had a copyright bar.
Was it crowded? Was it packed with troops?
No, not that much, no. Apart from, we had a few of the Gloucesters prisoners, a few of the prisoners on board. But it wasn't as bad as the Empire Troop, because it was a big issue.
And did you have duties on the boat?
I was the ex-sergeant for one of the troopers. Otherwise, we were left to our own devices.
And was that, what did that entail, being a deck sergeant?
Inspection, morning inspection, afternoon inspection, then night inspection, and the troop decks for 10 minutes, and see if everybody kept the kit in good order, and they weren't spreading it on the deck. Everybody had a section to feed them. And we integrated the prisoners with some of the lads. But we had a job with them.
As you were saying that it was a difficult voyage in that respect. In what ways was it?
Well, you have to keep an eye on the prisoners. There's some of them very well. So you'd have to follow food and eat it after dinner. Someone who was very clean and no clean habits. Mentally, they weren't very good. And then I said, Bolshe as well, if you try to pick anything. In fact, I had a chance to take him in front of Captain, then Captain Parahoki. It was difficult for me as well as him with the charging figures of war, or the lack of the figures of war. They had to be brought back into the real world. But mostly, you could control them, but you have to control them in a different way, you have to do it your own place. And some of our lads were getting a little bit tired of them as well, because they wanted more privileges, things like that.
You must have resented authority in a way.
Some of the things that he got away with. I mean, he was a real child, that was the game of time. He couldn't do that with them. He was only when they really got stopless and something that they clear out after sometimes. So, try to push it to it. And have to control it. And have to put them in charge. You have to put them in charge.
Did you see the commanding officer?
Colonel Cannon, well, we saw him on the air deck, but only for a brief period after that he kept himself. We didn't see him very much. Quite happily, yes, we saw him every day.
What was he like?
Risk. I believe he was a good officer, but he wasn't a friendly officer. I don't know whether that was just because he had a lot of.
And where did you go to?
Well, we stopped off in Hong Kong. And then I can remember coming back and we landed at Port Said. And we weren't expecting this, and all of a sudden, off the ship, onto a train, and down where the canal was. And we hadn't expected this at all. Yeah. We got wind of it, but we hadn't expected this. I remember getting off the ship, poor kid, onto this train with no windows in and wooden seats, and the local Egyptians storming the side of the station, stormed the train, and down the canal to Camp Gabriel.
And when was this?
That will be October time, October
53. What were you doing there?
Looking after the water stations on the canal. Water pumps, things like that. There were guards guarding the Moaska RAF station. Put the guard on that. Going to the water and George Club on the river lift.
Were there any problems whilst you were there?
Yes, the Egyptians were a bit of a problem. Just to try to cut the water pipes. Going to the camps. It's my job then. Now I've got the job of acting CQMS. Because Colour Sergeant Molly Neal had to go to Compassion Day. I was leaving to finish it in time, so he said, we'll do it, take over these two MS duties. And I did, and my job was to take food down to the guards on the pumping stations down the canal. Which did, so that was pretty good. Got me out of the general. Over the camp. Had to do a guard commander once or twice. Played football for the sergeants against the officers. Otherwise, it was a decent camp. So we had a lot of Greek people in there doing different jobs. Sergeant's mess was cool. We did a lot of parades. Otherwise, you could go down and in Alaska, or Farid, down to the beach, along the beach.
Any problem with any of the units? Because you were a battle-hardened unit.
The they thought they were the elite, and they were all active servicemen, and they just caught them for that. So, they thought they were the elite, they were further down there. And we invited them down one night for the sergeant, down to their mess, and we ended up in an Olympus. I remember the end of the Olympus, we came and we were dressed down by the sea, or not very much. I think we did have to accept our superior attitude.
Was Geoffrey still with you?
No, it was Colonel May.
He had quite a record, war record.
He was a
Crackers.
Crackers, his first action when he took over was right. The whole battalion will do a run down the canal. And he says, when I say the whole battalion, I mean coach the lot. With no exception. Not one. And there wasn't. And the whole lot of us had to turn out in shorts and shirt. And we did about 5 miles and then ran back again. And he was at the head shouting. And he was Crackers, but he was a good officer. He was the one that did the staff.
So then you would, presumably you said you were near the end of your time, so you come home, did you?
Yes, I got to Abenot, January 14th, early morning. No, January 14th, early morning, and late afternoon, taken fully down to the pumping station. I got back about 9 o'clock on the 15th of the morning. The 15th of the 5th, and I'm driving a guard. And as I came through the gates, one of the young clerks out of the company offices, waving his papers, he says, "You're flying at 1 o'clock, England." And he says, "You're taking a group of 24 with you for the month. And you're in charge of it." And it's very much. That meant I had 3 hours to pack and get to Moscow Airport. So, the other 24 I had to take them and find out who they were, sign them on, sign for them. I was packing gear. I just got everything ready. We got trucked up to Moscow, put in the aircraft. There was a Hermes, a whispering giant up there. We were flown to Blackbush Airport. They were stopped off in Malta. And the memory there was on the aircraft, I got sat between a couple of the sergeants from different things. I had education problems, one, and I left the airport with one. And both of them were airsick, and I got 3 dinners. And then we landed in Malta, we had a beer in Malta, and took off again, landed at Blackbush at 6 o'clock. On the 5th, no, that was the 14th, I'm sorry, I got up beyond there, that was the 14th. Landed in Blackbush at 6 o'clock in the morning on the 15th, that was it, James Burke. And we got off the aircraft, and I got all I had was KD shorts, a KD shirt, putties, and boots. And it was 15th of January, it was snow. And about half a mile to run across this town, I could get into this. There was a breakfast in there, bacon, eggs, and so forth, waiting for us. And then they took us to Gooch Street. I know they had never heard of Gooch Street. But it's an underground station that was closed. And that was the transit camp. The British Army, when they were coming back, they went through Gooch Street. And they were put with battle dress, that's my wife was. They were given battle dress and whatever, clothing. Fitting there as a soldier in England, not where they come from. But there's no greatcoats. So, and I was fully engraved with tapes and what have you, insignia from the canal zone. And there's no greatcoats for me, the greatcoats for the lads, there's no for me. So, this officer in charge says, "Oh, give him a British one, the leather thing with no sleeves and so forth. But he'd have 3 pips on." And there was no way I could get them on because they were stitched on. Oh, I said, "Go on, put it on." So when I got the King's Cross, I got all the lads on a truck. We got them to King's Cross. I got them on the King's Cross station. I waited for them. I said, "No, stand still. I'll get you on the train." And everybody was looking at me, and the MPs looking at me, because I had three tips away, three tips away, didn't even know what I was doing. Anyway, I got them on the train, and we travelled up to Durham. Branches Station had been closed. We travelled to Durham Station, and I got them off at Durham Station, and I could see, I got them on the platform, and I said, look, I said, don't run away. I said, I'm in charge of you, I've known you all the time. I said, don't drop me in the thing now. I said, stay here till I get the truck from Bransford. I said, when you get to Bransford, you can do what you like. But I must sign you over in Bransford. And we were told in one of the stairs, he said, back here. And they did. And I paid it to them, just let me get into Bransford. I got to the Bransford, signed them over to the guard commander there. And he said, oh, number 22, whatever it was. He said, take me down there and get the kid in there. And I opened that door, I always remember opening the door 22, and there were 22 kit bags flew over me, top and side head into the wood. And then I looked down and they were disappearing off the road. And I thought, well, I've signed them both. And they were going home. Actually, I mean, obviously they were going home. And I went to the side of this mess. Put my kit bag in there, and there was a coupon on duty, and then they said, can you look after that for me so I get back? And I went up. And that was it, till the next morning. That was about 8 o'clock at night when I got there. And I thought it was my wife's birthday. And she was a firecracker's church, and there was a girl there, and surprised me. I walked into her mother's house, and there was a girl coming, and I had no time to let them know. And I walked into church and the choir practice was on, and I remember the organist banging the door shut, so that's the end of that. Then that was the next morning, I went back on the Bonds buses back to Bransford. And funny enough, it was RSM Tomlinson, who was in charge of Bransford, who had been in Berlin. And there was a Sergeant Major Roxon who had been in the 1st Battalion. He was his. The real sergeant was there, and he sent for me, and asked me what I'd been doing, where I'd come from, and all this stuff. I just arrived out of the room. And all right, he said, okay. And he said, you just report down to some officer with him, and you'll give him 14 days leave. And that was it. And more to mind, I'll give the lads a deal. He came back the next morning, all 24 of them. He didn't let me down.
So you got your 14 days leave, and then what happened?
And then I had a report back, and we went through the process of the
And what was that process then?
Oh, you didn't get a suit or anything like that. You just went through the process of debriefing, and got your papers, and that was it. You're right. Sent home, you were given, I think you got 14 days leave, and then you were given 28 days leave. The end of your service, and that was supposed to be you've got to find a job. So my job was great.
And emoluments and money that had accumulated?
We got £200 bounty. I should never get that was sufficient for it. Because I think we were classed as mercenaries. We were United Nations Service, that was what was called a £200 bounty. And I always remember that £200 was a deposit down in this house. And I was January the 15th when I came home. And it was February the 26th when I finally finished. Which was about a fortnight after that, actually done it. But that was counting the leave and all this kind of.
And when did you get your campaign medal for Korea and the United Nations?
The ribbons. Medals in Egypt. I remember I was made so sick to a mess, and my job was to do all the medals in the box. And then we got the campaign medals as well. I'm highly delighted with it. As I say, I love the DNA.
And did you become involved with the veterans, the Korean veterans?
Yes, I became. I'm not involved with them now, but I did become involved with them. And then I was in hospital. I I hit the vest, and once I hit the vest, it did this, a trot in the lungs, and then a pangina, and I just kind of came up with that name. It's still the same with the new year, you know, I'm still involved with John Wall, but things like that. He left me where I was going on, so that I don't hear, and then when he brings me to me. I stayed in touch with him.
And what was your worst moment in career?
Worst moment? I think the second time I was wounded. I just did not know what this was. You know, all the blood, I couldn't see what it was, and I think that,
and the best time, moment, thoughts?
I think, even though I hated Camp Casey, it was just making all those little trips and the land except there was being. I always remember that as being very difficult, and I think that was, you know, I mean, it's one of the last came over that I knew, and it was just that one moment. I think that was the best moment of the when this kind of thought I was dead, and I was still there.